Good afternoon, everyone. How are you? Yay. Okay. You have Jesus in you. You should be a whole lot more alive. Are you feeling alive? Excellent. You got chocolate in your lunch pack, so that should help. It's really good to be here with you this afternoon. My name's Taryn. I'm one of the presenters here this afternoon. And we just thought Charlotte and I would just share a little who we are. That we're not just, you know, a bunch of Fruit Loops standing up here, which we are kind of. But it's really good to be with you. So let me just tell you, I've been involved in kids ministry for 24 years, and it's just been the most incredible roller coaster. And what amazes me every single day is that God chooses to use ordinary people to do unbelievable things. And so we've seen God do some incredible stuff. I've been here at BBC for 24 years, and involved in kids ministry for, well, particularly. This latest latch since for 13 years, and it's really just been amazing to just see what God's done and how He's grown us and shown us things, and it's just been a wonderful roller coaster ride. And so we're looking forward to sharing that with you. I have 3 children, a wonderful husband, and I think that's really all you need to know about me. Main thing is I love Jesus and I have a huge passion for kids.
I'll be working. I'll be sharing the stage with Taryn today. So if you haven't got one of these handouts, you can use these as we go along and follow the notes or make your own notes if you want to, or you could just listen or whatever. But I've been involved with youth ministry for the last 20 years, and I have the privilege of also serving here at BBC. So I'll be jumping on after she gets started. I've been married for 20 years, 2 kids, wonderful wife, and we can always talk about more stuff later on. So grab a chair, buckle yourselves in. Taryn, kick us off.
Okay. So just so that you know, Charlotte and I are going to jump backwards and forwards a little bit, and then we've got some Q&A happening at the end. So that's not the time for you to just take a quick 20-minute nap. You know, let's share, let's engage, let's make ourselves better. Okay, are you ready? Are you feeling good? Excellent stuff. All right, so here we go. I am going to give you my I Have a Dream speech. Do you have an I Have a Dream speech? Do you have an I Have a Dream speech? Do you have a dream? I hope some of you have a dream. Please not your head. Okay, let me tell you about my dream. I have a dream that I love this building because I get to look out at the city, except the summer trees have grown a bit funny this year, so now it's a bit blocking it. But we get to see the view of Sandton there. And this is the place where God's planted me, and I have a dream. And all those children and all those teens in those homes will not grow up without hope. Because I know, I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I know what it is to grow up thinking, I wonder if there's anyone out there that really loves me for me. I know that. I remember that. And I don't desire that for those kids. And so our heart, our vision is about, hey, we have such a loving desire for these kids, these teenagers, to not find themselves in a mess. I would love for us as churches to be able to preach so much, do so much, that we zero out our pastoral lists. That should be every one of our dreams, should it not? That everyone is so in love and so captivated by Jesus that He completely transforms their lives, and we land up with people that don't have issues. Let me just share a little story about what happened this weekend. I had a beautiful young girl came to me. She wanted to get baptized because her mom said that it was time for her to get right with God, which is always a great way to start one of those conversations. And the more I chatted, I said, okay, tell me about your life. She's 10 years old. Her parents have been fighting so much that they're now getting divorced. And they got divorced in May. And her mom has said, no, she feels like the best thing to do is to come to church, which is a great decision. But here's this little girl who's coming along, hasn't a clue, spoke to the mom afterwards, and I said to her, here, how can we help you? And she just burst into tears, and she said to me, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to parent on my own. I don't know how to raise my daughter. My life is falling apart, and I don't desire for her life to fall apart. And, you know, it was one of those moments where I could have had a good cry alongside that mom, but it broke my heart because I think none of us are happy with that story. None of us want that. But that is the reality in so many of the places we are. So we're all from diverse cultures and places here. But they've just released some statistics that have gone out in the US to say that 37% of families are single parent homes. And I would suspect in Africa that's a whole lot higher. And that's, I mean, we've got all these kids out there that are living without hope, without just knowing that someone loves them and someone created them for a purpose. And so for us, for Charlotte and I, we think, oh my, okay, if you get a chance to make a difference in the world, kids is the first place to start. Because you can get them young, you can get them early, and you can make such a difference. And so we hear this place that you're in is called The Quiver. Not by accident, and not because we had funny cheese before we named this venue, but because we believe our children are arrows. We believe that they are worthy to be discipled. So we say, hey, we've got a whole lot of little arrows in here, and we're going to send them out. And so the best way to get the gospel of Jesus out is to share it with a bunch of kids, because they're going to go places you and I will never go. Thankfully, they're going to go to school, and I never have to go back. They're going to go to varsity, and I don't have to go there either. They're going to go places and see things that I'm never going to see. But they're going to take Jesus with them. And I desire for children to be so rooted and grounded in the gospel of Jesus Christ that they can fly straight and strong. And so we speak often. We want flaming arrows. I mean, that sounds exciting to kids. It should sound exciting to you too. Kids that are so strong. And that's when we talk about, hey, we in our churches, we want to have next-gen ministries that make these children so strong. Not cotton wool arrows. In the context that I'm working with at the moment, we have a lot of parents that are desperately trying to make cotton wool arrows out of their children. They are so protected that if you try to shoot those arrows or the first storm that came along, they'd lie in a crumpled little wet mess. That's not what God desires for us to do. He wants us to make these kids so strong and so able to do that because God loves them and he's got a huge, big plan for them. And I think that's the thing we need to embrace as churches is knowing that just as God's got a plan for us, God's got a plan for them. The Bible's full of those children. The little girl that gave a message to Naaman. I mean, if you think about that, how scary that would have been for that little kid. But yet she did. God uses children, and I've seen God do that. So children are definitely people that God used. Then I've seen youth. I've seen youth being used in an incredible way, and I've seen youth sharing with my kids. And that's so powerful. That's the gospel. That's the gospel of one generation passing it on to the next. You know this psalm quite well, I'm sure, Psalm 78. This is my dream continued. Psalm 78, 7. So each generation should set its hope anew on God. Wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? Because surely as we planting churches, the idea is that the church would carry on. Is that your dream? I hope so, since it's at your church planting conference. That's the dream, that we would be setting this hope of Jesus Christ on this generation so that it could pass on and pass on and pass on. I want to share a picture with you, Jason, if you could put up my nice hill picture. I was privileged enough to go there. Is it showing there? Okay, I'm staring blankly at the black screen. That's not on. That's why. Okay, there we go. I was privileged to be able to go to this little village. It's called Gourdes, and it's in the south of France. And there is a church at the top of the hill. And that church took 800 years to build. It's in a rural community. And I just, it was such a real encounter, and God so spoke to me at that. And I've been able to share it so much. Farming community built around 1200 or so AD. And can you imagine people coming, they had to farm their fields and there wasn't a lot of extra cash. But they came along and they built this church. Little by little, they were doing that. That is the best multi-generational leadership and vision I have ever seen. And to think that people, they just did their bit, and that's what landed up. But someone had to pass that down. Someone had to say, this is important, we're going to keep doing it. Even though we've got limited cash, we're all working our own fields. And so therefore, you know, we've got to sacrifice and take whatever time off we have to go and build this church. That was so encouraging for me. And I wonder, do we do the same thing? Are we passing on that thing? So as church planters, are we saying to our kids and our teens, you're taking on the baton? And then we're equipping them to do so. And so, guys, I want to say we've got a massive urgency huge, big urgency in the world today. I don't know. You just need to open up the newspaper daily to know there's urgency. We have to get Jesus out there. And getting Jesus into a whole lot of arrows, for me, that's going to be the best place for us to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. So that's why I think we need to be having disciples. I want to talk to you a little bit about believing, because I think this is the biggest problem. We don't feel equipped. Do you believe in yourself to be able to share exactly all of this? Because I think deep down in us, and I've spoken to so many people, they're like, kids, teens, no ways, never. They freak me out. They have snot. They want girlfriends. They have acne. I've done with that. Never again. So I think in each one of us, there's this little thing that's scared. But I want to challenge you today, no matter where you are, in whichever church context, I want to challenge you that this is an important part of whatever church life you happen to be in. That it can't just be a one-generational thing. It needs to be multi-generational. And we need to be investing in generations behind us. Okay, so now in my aging state, as the children frequently tell me, I get quite a few generations to share with, and that's great, so my job just increases. But we get to share with generations come after us and share hope. Isn't that what the church is all about? That's why we exist. Not just sharing with those we happen to know about, but sharing with generations coming after us. And that means we're going to have to do some different stuff. We're going to have to get to know some different things. And so you're going to need to be obedient with that. Say, hey, God, I believe you can use me. I don't sing at all. I'm like a frog. But God's had me in this ministry for 13 years leading worship. I pray for our children daily, and that somehow there will be children that come out of here singing. But you know what? God didn't want an opera singer. He just wanted someone to say yes. And that's what he wants from you. And so I want to challenge you today that I think you can be one of these. Can you show us the next slide? You should smile. Do you know what that is? How many of you have watched this movie? Okay, well done you. You should get a chocolate. Okay, this is the B movie. One of the things about working with Next Generation is you need to understand what flicks their buttons. But anyway, for those of you that are slightly, you know, older, I mean, have you seen Top Gun? Yes, Top Gun. Do you fancy being one of those people? I mean, let's be honest. Deep down inside, we all fancy being some of those strutting out people in these cool kits and, you know, we're going to rule the world. Yes, it is. You have it, I know. We want to be one of those. I want to say today, you can be a pollen jock. Now, let me just tell you about a pollen jock. A pollen jock gets to go out and collect pollen, and they're the main people in the hive. Because they get to bring back the pollen that makes the honey. We get to go out and collect disciples and to gather and to get out. And so I want you to get your, you know, super funky hat on and to think, hey, I'm the man. I can do it. Because you can be a pollen jock. You can get out there, but you've got to believe in yourself. You have to do what Nike says. Just do it. And so you in different church contexts, this space is the most unbelievable space, but we've been able to sit and do Next Gen out of the middle of nowhere in the Eastern Cape. We're doing it at the moment in different contexts around our city where, you know, there's no electricity, there's no toilets, there's nothing. You don't need anything. God just needs you to say you. And so where you've got believing there, will you please write, I need to believe in what God can do through me. He doesn't need stuff. He doesn't need a budget. He needs you. He wants you to have a dream, and then he wants you. All right, then I'm going to tell you a little bit about investing. How many of you have ever played marbles? Oh, dear, I'm beginning to wonder. Some of you had a very deprived childhood. Marbles. Here we go. All right. So in this tub here, I have 614 marbles. This is how many Sundays a child will come to our Next Generation if they come every single Sunday. So from when they check in at 6 months to the time when they leave at the end of their grade 6 year. We have 48 Sundays in a year where we're serving, we're doing ministry, and that's how many marbles there are. That's not a lot of marbles. That's the only chance I get to share with kids how much Jesus loves them. And that's a scary thing. Because equally, I can also have someone who just comes once. And I think we've all had that. We've all had just once. There's a kid that came a little while ago, 3 years ago, she came. And we got to share Jesus with her. And the next week, she died in an accident. And you know, that's haunted me. I thought, I had one time to share Jesus with her. And have I done the right thing? And so I want to say, guys, we're playing for keeps. Whichever church context you're working in, when you're creating disciples, you're playing for keeps. We need to remember that. Because sometimes we get so bogged down with all the stuff, we forget that we're actually playing for keeps. We must make sure we've got the budget and the program and the, you know, everything. Sometimes actually just having us and God and playing for keeps is all we need. And I want to remind us that we're playing for keeps. Reggie Joyner shared a lot of that. He's a good guy if you're interested in working with Next Gen. But make the most of this. Use transitions, people going through transitions. This lady, I've got such an in into her life. She's just gone through a divorce. Major life transitions. Anyone that needs parenting advice, it's those new parents that come along and thinking, I've got a 6-week old and they won't sleep. Help. It's amazing how many people come as first-time parents to churches because they're like, freak, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do this on my own. Use transitions in your churches to be able to make disciples. And I want to talk a little bit about volunteers. We often think, hey, we're just investing in kids. Please invest in your volunteers. Share with them. Take them on this journey. Tell them they can do it. Get them growing. Get them doing. Pour into them. God's pouring into you, you've got to pour out. And so I want you to picture like a bucket system, like a fountain. That's what it needs to be. When you're creating disciples, you've got to pour what's in your bucket into somebody else's bucket that it'll go into somebody else's. That's that multi-generational approach, multi-people approach. Share whatever you've got. Share podcasts. Share everything. Share with people what God's doing in your life in the hope that that would help other people. Okay, two more things and then Charles on his way. Together. One of the biggest complaints I've had from people working in youth and kids ministry is that it's a solo affair. Like people like, shut the kids in that space. As long as we don't hear them, we're fine. That's like the worst thing in the world. We've got to do this together. If we're not invested in this together, what on earth are we doing? Like kids ministry and teen ministry should never be called like a babysitting service. One of the worst things, it's a swear word for me, people can come along and say, where's the creche? Like, don't like that. We do not look after children. We are raising disciples. We've got 18-month-olds that sit down and listen to a lesson. And if they take home God is big, great. Some people at 40 are still trying to get that. We've got to be so intentional about who we are, and we've got to do it together. We can't just expect people to sit the children there and, you know, yay, great, someone's doing kids ministry and teens ministry. Praise the Lord. You know, I don't have to worry about it. No. What happens if that 18-month-old learned God is big then, and the next time he comes along, Jesus loves me? What could he be doing at 20 when he's got 18 years under his belt of discipleship? What could he do to the church? And so I want to ask you, just light up those little arrows, pour into them, because if you do that, we're going to set the church on fire. I dream of a day where we can send out a generation of children that will change the world. They're going to change politics, they're going to change medicine, they're going to change the church, because they are so grounded in the gospel. And you know what the thing is with the youth, is they think they can. Because you get 40-year-olds and they're like, oh, I can't, and he didn't love me, and, you know, I'm so depressed. And those are real issues. I'm not making light of those. But they've got stuff. The next gen, they don't have stuff. I said to a little kid on Sunday, hey, that's awesome. You are so good at that. And she said, yeah, I know. I was like, when last did you get an adult saying that? I know, I was excellent, hey. And then we sort of, as adults, we don't know how to respond to that. We're like, yes, but you know, must be humble. No. Let's set our generation on fire, this generation for Jesus. Okay, last thing. I want to talk to you about communicating. You are a passion meter. And no, that doesn't belong in a funny shop. You, you know, you got it there. You set the tone with whoever it is that you're trying to make disciples with. If you're not excited about Jesus, how on earth do you expect them to be? If you are working in a ministry in a church and you're not excited about making disciples, well, no one else is going to be. You need to be the passion meter, and you've got to communicate that all the time. You've got to be talking with everybody. Hey, this is why we're doing it. This is why we do it. And you have to remind them. I don't know. I've been doing this for 13 years and working with some parents. I'm like, really? You still haven't got it. But you've got to drip feed all the time. This is important. This is why we're doing this. Remember this? This is why we're doing it. And keep that communication going. You've got to communicate until you are blue in the face, and then you should communicate some more. Tell parents, what is the dream you have for their children? Tell the church, why are we doing this? Because people forget. And so when we get to planning a vision, the why, which is what we've been talking about, I want you to do that. And then I want to challenge you that you need to be good listeners. Listen to what's going on around you in the world, because the world will be telling you what we need to be doing as a church. You know, when I sit with a group of moms and they say, hey, yo, we're into swinging. I'm like, yeah, we should be talking to that. Like, this is not a way for you to go. We need to be listening to the world, not thinking, oh my gosh, I never grew up with that. I'm just going to stick my head in the sand. No. We need to be engaging with what people are experiencing. Listen to people. That's the way you're going to be the best able to disciple where kids are at, where parents are at. And then truth. There is this enormous temptation that we should dumb down the scripture for kids. It's lies. Kids can take, where's my Bible? Kids can take this. And they get it a whole lot more than any of us. Don't dumb down the scriptures. If you want to make disciples, sink their teeth into this. Give them a hunger and a thirst for what goes on in here. You can, I've taken the most unbelievable scriptures. In fact, this weekend, would you like to know, we are doing Rahab with our preschool class. She was a naughty lady, everybody. She made mistakes, but she chose to trust in a great big God. And don't we all need to hear that message? And so don't dumb this down. We've got disciples to make. Charles is going to tell you how to do that.
So there's a competition in any church on where the best department is to work. And I must tell you, the most action happens with teenagers. The most drama happens with children's ministry. So Taryn can handle that. But I love working with teens, because teens are just raw emotion and will do anything if they believe the challenge is big enough. They will. And teenagers have changed the world over the last 100 years. And if you remember back as a teen, you just took risks. And you just did it blindly. Okay, most of the time you'd fall over and most of the time you'd fail. But when you got something right and you realized you could get something right, you just realized you had something in you. And I just love working with teens and seeing their raw potential, encouraging them a little bit, and then just letting them go. Now, we live in a disposable world. Let's be real. Everything is disposable. 300 messages you get a day are disposable. If a teenager wants to break up with a boyfriend or girlfriend, they do it via WhatsApp. Because it's disposable. It's quick. It's easy. Emails are disposable. Video games are disposable. Cars are disposable. Leeds United fans are disposable. Anybody and everybody is just disposable. And it's just quick and it's easy. And there's no sense of patriotism anymore. We used to be patriotic. We used to be patriotic to the teams we supported. We didn't just go and follow the blue shirts when we wanted to. We'd stick to Leeds, even though they were losing. Or we'd stick to our country or our leaders. And we would stick to things. We would stick to the Lego set we got when we were a small kid and carry it around with us. And now it's like you buy somebody a Wii game set with 40 games on, and they play one game, and they're like, they just move on. you know, just good examples I've just got from friends over the last few years. But you need to kind of like say, what is, how do you get it to stick? How do you change the mindset of a young person? And I'm not even talking about millennials. We'll get to millennials later. I'm not talking about 20 to 30 year olds. I'm talking about teenagers. So last 2 years ago, I took 50 teenagers and we decided to challenge them. We would raise 250,000 Rand and we would cycle the 94.7 cycle challenge with 50 teenagers. So in the previous church I was in, we took 50 teens, and so that means you're riding for 94.7 Ks, and we found bikes, we found helmets, we found chains for bikes, we found things, and we just shoved teenagers on a bicycle. But to do that, you have to train with teenagers. Some people are natural on a bicycle, some people don't know how to ride a bicycle. And so every second Saturday for 4 months, we would go cycling with teenagers. We would meet at 5:30 in the morning, and we would hit the gem of Joburg, the Spruit that runs through Joburg, and we would go and we would cycle. And we would start with 20 Ks, and then we would 30 Ks, and then 40 Ks, and before we went to the cradle to do more, and you would just do more. But here's the deal. What is the first thing I saw? 50 teenagers, probably 10 leaders. The 10 leaders that went with me were probably aged between 22 and 35. Now, here's the thing. Straight away, I can tell you who the leaders and the shepherds are, and I can tell you who the people are that are just in it for themselves. The first guy gets on his bicycle. He's at Bible school. You would think he's a shepherd. You would think he knows what it is to be a leader. How fast can he go? Grabs two or three of the teenagers, the fastest guy, and he just disappears. We just lose them. This is a three-hour training run. The others kind of are groupies. Just find young people who are fast, who know how to bike. Who are the people left behind? Who are the people that are stuck right behind looking after the last person? That's your shepherd. There's a lot of people who want to be preachers and leaders, but there are very few shepherds out there. The shepherd is the guy right at the back. The shepherd is the guy going, who's last? If I'm going to get everyone over the finish line, I need to have the same mentality as a wolf does when wolves walk. When wolves walk in a pack, the oldest go in front because they have the pace. Right behind them are the strongest to look after the elderly. In the middle are the moms and the young ones. At the back are also the strong ones. But right at the back, 10 meters behind, is the leader of the pack. He's there to pick up anyone that's slow, any attack from behind, and he looks after that whole pack. We need young people and we need young leaders who are willing to stay behind. We finished that race. The last teenager that got over the line took 7.5 hours, but we got them over. And where was the guy who came first in 3 hours? Or he left and just totally forgot it. Now, there's grace, and God is a God of grace. But if we want to create leaders, we need to set the mood. So it's called like a mood architect. We need to know what mood we're setting. We need to know that youth ministry is not command C and command V. It's not copy-paste. It's different. The way we do youth ministry here might be different from the way we do youth ministry in East London or in PE or in a different part of Joburg. There is no one cookie-cutting way of doing youth ministry. And for some of you sitting in the room who have had coffee with me and chatted youth ministry, there are some things we kind of have to look at. We have to look at a few things, but you have to look at your key people who are going to be in youth ministry. So let's be real. The key leaders in youth ministry are millennials. Now, they get a hard rap. Let's just be real. Millennials nowadays, if you're aged between 20 and 32, you probably get told you're this. I want to say the people with the best mood in a room at any given time is probably a millennial person. They have the most energy. If they're there, they've chosen to be there because millennials don't fill their diary. They have it open for the best opportunity. So if they're there, they're committed. Their smile's always the biggest. They're in it to win it. They might not have longevity and can't carry on. We'll talk about that later. But if you've got guys in a room that are excited, your young people will be excited. If you talk to a millennial person and you talk to their head and you talk to their hands, you tell them, this is what you must do, this is how you must do it, they'll jump in. What they need, what they don't have, is something you can't just give them, is heart. That's where you need the older people in the room. You need men and women that are older than them to teach them what heart is. They need to be able to come alongside people who are younger and say, I've done this before. Let me show you what happens. So what I find in a church, if somebody finds a good youth pastor that's probably mature and a little bit older, I often find senior pastors and leaders do this. They go, oh, great. I don't have to worry about it anymore. Probably the worst thing you can do, and it happens in 99% of churches. Why? Because there ain't no ways youth pastors, senior pastors, have got time for youth ministry. They're so busy doing what they're doing that children's ministry and youth ministry must just work. Then you get those that go, no, no, we've invested in them. We're there for them. We'll help them. We'll get alongside them. I'm like, oh, really? So take the best tennis player in the world. Best tennis players in the world, Djokovic, Roger, who are their coaches? Their coaches are the best tennis players from 20 years ago. The best footballers in the world. Who are their coaches? The best rugby players in the world. Who are their coaches? The best business people in the world. Hire businessmen and women that went before. Hire them full time. Not one meeting every 3 weeks with your youth pastor to say, how's it going? The best teachers in the world become educators on teaching young men and women how to teach. If you want your children's and youth ministry to succeed, you need to be there, not once, not twice, but you have to get alongside the person who's leading your youth work. Why? Because you need to encourage them. Why? Because you have heart. And all a millennial leader or a young leader is looking for is someone to say, can you help me with this? Can you show me? Anyone over a mature age here. You have learned stuff. You have seen stuff. It's time for you to pass that baton on to somebody. If youth ministry is not growing, if children's ministry is not growing the way you're doing it, then maybe you should stop doing it the way you're doing it and do it somewhere else. Who is going to be the right person to tell the youth pastor or the children's pastor to do that? Not them. Why? Because unfortunately, young people don't want to fail. They don't want to acknowledge that what they're doing is wrong, not working, because they're always like, I can do this. I can do this. And they actually need someone to come in and go, let's try it this way or this way or this way, and I'll help you. But often, we're working with leaders that go, when I used to run youth ministry, it used to work. Well, I want to tell you, please stop saying that, because that does not help a young person at all. That does not help a young leader. The way we did youth ministry when I was in youth in the 80s and the 90s is way different. But it doesn't mean that you need all the bells and whistles. Because the best thing to do when running youth ministry is from here. It is not about the biggest TV or the biggest video game. Set the mood. Balance the mood. It's not just about fun. Fun is important. If you aren't having fun with young people, you've missed them. It's not just about relational, but if you aren't in relation with young people, you're losing them. It's also about spiritual. But it's not just about being spiritual. It's taking those three things as a third and a third and a third and balancing it together. Not one night spiritual, one night fun. For those of you who grew up in the church, how many of you can remember any message that was preached when you were a teenager or a kid? Maybe one, maybe two, but how many of you can remember the fun stuff you did? The relationships that happened when you did this, or you did this event, or you had fun. You have to create that. You have to set the mood. You have to be the architect if you want a young person to grow, to grab hold of the gospel of Jesus. Then you have to equip somebody. Now, this is something we might need to do in SA Rugby, but there's always a chance to see how far someone can kick a ball down the field. Probably call that a soccer analogy as well. And anyone can kick a ball far enough once, but can they do it consistently? If they can't do it consistently, why are you giving them all the leadership in the world? So what? A young man, a young woman steps up into your leadership team and you're like, that's it, they've got it. I'm going, they got nothing. Not even the best sportsman in the world say, I've got it. Even they have coaches. Even they have life coaches. They're just consistent at what they do. Consistency is key. Your young leaders need to be consistent. If you want to take young leaders into battle, you need to know that there are risks and there are landmines, and you need to calculate those landmines and you know where your risks are. Those are easy. It's about calculating the risks you don't understand. So this 2 weeks ago, I took a whole bunch of teenagers on a mission trip. I took a bunch of leaders with. I said to this young girl, 22, grew up in the church. I want you to handle this holiday club. So we get into this area in Haman's Kraal, and I said, it's yours. I want you to run this. Now, here's the deal. So there's two things. Either we do it for them, or we do it with them. There's a danger in both. If we do it for them, all they're doing is watching us. If they're doing it on their own because we say, it belongs to you, I'm going to stand aside, you must handle it, we're not showing them how to do it. If you aren't in the trenches with your young people, there's no point in them listening to you or giving you any time of day. You have to get your hands dirty. Don't stand aside. Get in there with them. Get dirty with them. Dig the trenches with them. And where do young people spend their time? 8 hours of their day? In school. So if your youth workers and your children's workers aren't involved in school at least 2 or 3 days a week, you've missed them. Because you're not going to get them just on a Friday or a Sunday or on a Wednesday, whenever your expression of your evening or your day is. You need to have a clear vision, and you need to have a vision that's not too big or not too small. When adults come to me and say they want to get involved in youth ministry, aged 40 to 66, I pull them in like this. Why? Because an adult who's aged between 40 and 66 probably has a teenager, probably wants his teenager to be happy, has resources in business, has access to transport, and also has finances, but also has heart. You could pull them in to train your leaders. Those leaders can then make disciples of the young leaders who can then drift through the church like this. It's about connecting. It's about passing that baton. If all you're doing is retaining the baton as a leader, be it a senior leader or a youth pastor, you're not passing the baton, how is God going to give you a new baton? How is he going to actually take it from you? You kind of have to hand it over and say, that's it. I'm not letting you go. I'm not letting you do your own thing. We're going to do this together. Now, there is a place to let them run their course, but watch how you pass that baton over. Now, you need an environment. There's a saying that says every one of us has a balcony and a basement. Balcony is what's visible, what we can see and what people can see. And a basement is what happens behind the scenes. So the same way David, before he fought Goliath, had to fight the lion and the bear in private without anybody seeing, in his basement, behind closed doors with God, praying. God says, pray quietly behind closed doors before I can use you in public to honor me. We have to do the same thing. Your basement. What's happening in your basement? How often are you praying for young people? How often are you fasting for young people? We have a lady in the church who I give a list of all our teenagers to. And then I say to her, what I want you and the prayer team to do is, without meeting a single child, go and pray over every name and ask God for a message for every single teenager. Write it on a piece of paper. Take a month to do it. And then at the end of the year, we give our teenagers a letter from people who have been praying for them. Say, this is a message for you that we believe God has laid on our heart. We want you to know we've been praying for you for the last 2 or 3 months. So we're doing that. How that's going to work, I don't know. But you have to create a basement before you create a balcony. Teaching. Henry Ford said, you can have a car in any color as long as it's black. It was his biggest downfall because the competition passed him within 10 years. If you are doing youth ministry the same way and it's not working, you need to try something else. Otherwise, the competition is going to pass you. The church down the road is going to reach young people that you're not reaching. Or, in the case of a young youth pastor that was with us from East London yesterday going, we are struggling to get young people into the church because the church and the youth groups are so lame that we don't want to be a part of it. Now, youth group is not about how cool or how lame it is. It's about finding the right person in the school, investing in them, and let them be the people who pull people into youth ministry. Why is youth ministry important? Because I work with the Baptist Union, I work with the Anglicans, I work with the Presbys, I work with the Charismatics, and there's a big problem we have, is that there's no feeding into the churches anymore. If you remember in the 90s and the 2000s, there were teams. There were YFC teams. There were Baptist Youth of South Africa teams. There were all these Afrikaans churches that had these teams of young people that filled into Yeriva Lives, and then they would become the next pastors of the future. Those things are not existing anymore. So unless we jump, and jump very quickly, and there are a couple of places that are jumping, into the schools for our young people, who are going to be our leaders that we're going to hand the baton to? There'll be a few, but very few. We need to become the teachers. And then lastly, we need to be the protector. Now, I'm not talking about just checking what's happening on social media, checking like that. I'm talking about how are we going to look for red flags and put a peg in the ground and go, this is not healthy, this is healthy. This is not healthy, this is healthy. when I was in Scouts many years ago, for some of you who are as old as me, we used to have to tie our own knots. And so we tied our own knots on this very long rope, probably from here to the road, and we would spend weekend tying knots. And then we would climb to the highest mountain on the last day, and they would throw the rope down, and they would say, get down, and they would push us without a harness. It was the 90s, we didn't have harnesses, okay? And we had to hold onto this rope. And I said, that is a very high mountain. That's about 5 stories high. There was nothing at the bottom. He said, do you not trust the own knots you just made? Because if you can't trust the skill set God's given you, why are you in this? You need to know what skill set you have. You need to know what you're short. You need to train in what you don't know, or you need to hire people that can help you. Spend, invest in the youth and the children's ministry. Otherwise, where will it be if we don't do that? So I'm going to hand back to Taryn, and I'll speak to you guys later.
All right. Okay. Do you need to wriggle? Even grown-ups need to wriggle. Okay. So, we've got the why. Do you have the why? Are you feeling a vision? Are you starting to have a dream? Good. Okay. Shell's chatted to you a little bit about the how. I want to talk to you about every opportunity. Because in churches, we cannot afford to miss opportunity. Because a missed opportunity means a missed disciple. And I assume you're about making disciples. That's why we're in this business. We want to make disciples, and so we've got to make the most of every single opportunity. And so I want to tell you, there's a little word there called for. That's what I want to chat to you about today. We need to be for our kids. We need to be for our parents. We need to be for our volunteers. Now, that's a new one. Because I think you can probably try and figure out some of those others. I'll go into it. But being for our volunteers, I think churches badly abuse their volunteers. Because we take and take and take and take and take, and then they go, that's it, I'm never again. We need to feed in. As much as our volunteers are working with us, shoulder to shoulder, in the trenches, we also need to be feeding them. Discipling in next gen and in youth is not just about discipling the kids. It's about discipling the team that works alongside them and pouring into them and saying, what you guys doing matters. I told them the other day, we are going to be the most famous investment bankers in the world. And some of them looked at me a little skew, like you are looking at me now. But get this. We are investing in eternity. Think about our returns. So I married a most wonderful man. His great granny was an opera singer in Australia. Came back, found out about Jesus in Australia doing opera. Came back to South Africa. Her 4 children started this church. And so it continues. Like, are we making the most of every opportunity? Are we seeing that this is an investment in the future? We're not going to see it. You know? We're not going to see that we've impacted Johnny's children and Johnny's grandchildren. We're not going to see that. But in heaven we will. And when we're 90, shuffling along with our Zimmer frames, we're going to have some awesome laughs to have because we've done it together. And so as leaders, let me tell you, we need to be in the trenches together. Charles said that. Don't be a leader who doesn't know how to serve. The most important thing when I look at volunteers, I'm looking at the guy that's picking up the sandpit toys, that's wiping the juice, that's gone to fetch a broom. I'm thinking, yeah, that's the guy I want to work with. We want people that know how to work. And I want to tell you, the leaders that have meant the most to me in my life are not the leaders who say, do this, do this, do this. They get alongside me and say, let me sweep with you. That's the leader that makes the difference. So I want you to be having a serving heart. We want to be for people. We want to be for our kids, for our parents. What does that mean? Well, figure out what they need. And so in our context, we've decided our relationships are a bit skew. And so we have events that speak into that. We have a daddy-daughter dinner. It's coming up in 2 weeks' time. because we've discovered that we have fathers and daughters who have very skew relationships. And I want our dads to make the most of that, to sow into those little girls' lives that I do not have to send up a whole lot of girls to Charles who are cutting themselves and throwing up everything that they eat. Because dads have spoken into that. I have a mother-daughter dinner, same thing. We're giving parents an opportunity because one of the biggest problems in our situation is parents don't have enough time for their children. We get to spend 40 hours a year with children. Parents get to spend 3,000, speaking spiritual stuff. That's sort of rough statistics. We have to equip our parents. If we want disciples to grow strong, we can't just rely on a Sunday morning. And so you've got to have events that are going to do that. Find events that work in your situation. We've had story night a couple of weeks ago. We're telling kids stories, but in that we're teaching parents how to tell stories. How is that? That we've got a generation of parents who don't know how to tell the gospel to their children, don't know how to share stories with their children. I had a dad come to me on Sunday, he says, I just don't know how to do this. I don't know. Well, that means I've got to be caring for him. I'm for him. And so I take him along. I say, try this. I found this book for you. Go and read this to your daughter. I've got another one. Come back. We're going to help you to be able to bring Jesus into every part of their home. But we can't just sit back and say, hey, good luck, everyone. I've done Sunday. I'll see you again next Sunday. And it's a hell of a hard job. No. You've got to be able to say, I've done Sunday. And how can I walk with you in the week? How can I make a difference? How can I help? We've got to do this together. We've got to be for our parents, for our kids. And that means we've got to have our eyes open and seeing what's going on around us. And we've also got to be for our community. We can't be the church that's like, we don't do this and we don't do that. We've got to be for those people out there. What does our community need? What do our schools need? What do our teachers need? And create events around that. You do not need a whole lot of stuff. I listened to the most fantastic podcast this morning. We've written it on your resources list. It was the Think Orange podcast, and it was the one with Carrie Hood. And she said this, it's not about the stuff you have, but it's about why you do it. If you've got the heart for disciples, it doesn't matter. You can disciple people under a tree. You just need to have the heart, and events can flow from that. Whatever you're doing, make sure your heart's in it. Examine your heart and then do it. And so I just want to say, go out there and do it. And then I want to give you one little postscript. You need to be organized. Because so many people are going to say, hey, we're youth, we're kids, we don't need to be organized. Rubbish. Jesus had a plan. God had a plan. And you have got the most precious investment that God's given us. Don't take it lightly. You've got to put everything you have into making sure that what we do with them is excellent. That's investing wisely. That's saying, I've got these kids for so long, I'm going to make sure I organize this so we can do it the best that we can. Because we don't know how long we have. And I'm not going to get to heaven one day and God's going to say, hey, what on earth were you thinking here? I'm like, hey, you know, I thought I'd get it together. He's like, I gave you those kids. And you had them for an hour. Be intentional about what you do. But the way to bring joy to your parents, to your kids, to your volunteers, to the whole church is having a plan and sticking to it and saying, we're setting out a plan. And dream big, for goodness sake. We serve a big God. Have big dreams. And let's get together. Let's get a few of us together and say, hey, how on earth do we achieve these big dreams? Well, God's given us some clever people. Even amongst the disciples, motley crew of people, they somehow managed to get it together, but there's a plan. And so I have a plan, because what we get to do, making disciples, is the most unbelievable thing you will ever get to do. It's the best roller coaster ride you'll ever go on. It's the best bucket list thing you'll ever get to tick off. Because one day when we're ticking along with our Zimmer frames, you're going to say, that family's different. Because that child knew about Jesus. That one's different. And we've seen that. I've seen that. Kids come to church and their parents are like, all right, we had that. You don't mind if I just pop off for a massage quickly? I'm like, yes, actually, you know, what time are you going to be back? No, we'll be an hour late, but I really need a massage. Okay, we've got to work with this. But parents do different things. But you know what? That parent's not coming to church. And Daddy got baptized at the beginning of the year. Praise Jesus. That's what we're here for. And so you've just got to go at it. We get to do this. And we get to see stories unfold in kids' lives. We get to take a little child, and which grows up into a big, somewhat not so pretty teen. And we get to say, God's got a story for you. And we get to see that wonder unfold in their lives. Someone loves me. Someone's got a plan for me. I want to be part of this. Don't run away from that because we feel scared. Take up the challenge and jump in. Show people that you're for them. That's the best part of being a disciple maker. Charles is going to carry on with some relationships and then we'll hit Q&A.
So I'm going to sit down for this because I'm trying to get a point across. If you want to have a relationship with a young person, you have to slow down and make some time for them. Why? Because the guy who made time for me when I was 16, when I had a gun cocked to my head, ready to end my life because I just wasn't fitting in and I was dark and angry, was the one guy who stopped what he was doing and he found me where I was. We work with young people that are absolutely not going through what we went through. They're hurting. They're angry. They're dark, and now they're even confused about what sexuality they are and what they can and can't be. There are predators out there that are hurting and going out to hurt our kids. And we need men and women who are willing to sit in the gap and stand in the gap. A young person needs you to acknowledge them. A young person needs to know that you're willing to walk with them and not be like every other youth pastor, uncle, mom, dad, teacher, who promised to be there for them and never was there with them. A young person needs you to look in their eyes, even though they can't look you back in your eyes, and you have to walk with them. They want to do fun stuff with you, because they might not have a dad that is fun, or they might not have a dad. I have two daughters, one is 17, and we adopted a young one. She's 6 going on 16. I don't have sons. I've always wanted a son. The Lord said to me, I'll give you many sons, but they won't be from your blood. They will be in the church. I have spent many times working with young men and seen them flourish, seen them grow into men of God. I've also seen many of them fall away, but I've never stopped praying for them, believing in them. I've seen young girls become pillars in society, in their houses and in the church. Why? Because I've spent time with them. More carefully now, the older I'm getting. So you're not seeing me going to the movies with a bunch of 14-year-old girls. You're not even seeing me going to the movies with 14-year-old guys. But alongside my leaders who are younger, who teenagers look up to, I say to them, let's do something where we're making memories, having fun, creating laughter, and then knocking on the door and saying, how, why, what's happening? Why? Because I don't have parents. I don't have kids here with one parent or two parents. I have kids sometimes with 5 parents. I have a kid that's probably born from a test tube that has a mother and a father that split up and now has this, and then the mother who gave the sperm now wants to be part of the family as well. I have girls who are hurting themselves, cutting and pulling and doing all kinds of things. I have young men and women toying with the ideas of astro travel and Satanism and just so much wrong stuff. I was at a party this weekend where a mom who was telling me that she went to the bottle store for her 17-year-old son, and she's in the church to buy him some hard tack because they were going to go and have a games night this weekend. So she said, I didn't buy him much. I just bought him some tequila, some vodka, and some brandy. And I'm going, what? And yet her husband was sitting right next to her, but they aren't even talking because I know because I spend time with her husband and their marriage is not in a good place, that if he were to say anything now, that would just cause an absolute nightmare. So he just lets it go. And this young boy actually just needs somebody to be a man, come alongside him. And it's hard. It's hard for a short, bald Dutchman to go and walk up to a 16-year-old guy or a girl and go, yo, what's cracking? So I'm the youth pastor here. So at teen church on a Sunday, I go up to some teenagers and I try and throw the moves down and go, yo, yo. And they go, stranger danger. They just literally run away. However, it takes about 18 months to win the trust of a young person. That, or take them out of their comfort zone to a safe place with people around. Let them be vulnerable in a place where they feel safe. So that's a balance. Like a mission trip, like a trip to Sun City, like somewhere where you can do something. What my dad used to do, he used to take me fishing in the middle of the Vaal River at 14 and say, well, 11, and go, right, boy, now we're going to talk about the birds and the bees. I can't go anywhere. Take men on a hike, because when they see how big a mountain is, they'll see how small they are and how big God is. Take women, spoil them, young women. Teach them what it is to be loved, because they're not loved. I work with so much issues and so much child trafficking. It breaks my heart when I see what's happening. And our young men and women just want to be loved. One-on-one relationship. Look them in the eye. If you know anything about the greeting format in Africa, and a whole lot of you know this, but you don't know this, there's huge things when it comes to the shaking of hands. I grew up very Afrikaans on a farm. And I know that without being taught this, the firmer the handshake, make eye contact, the younger person does not let go first. There's always an acknowledgement. In those people who are not white, the acknowledgement of holding the hand longer speaks of friendship. An acknowledgement. How much time are you acknowledging a greeting when you speak to a young person, when you look into the eye, and you can go back to the conversation? And say, how was that test? How is it going with your mother? How is it going with that sports thing you went on? You can't be at every sporting event. I get that. But acknowledging the person, remembering their name, going back to their name. So white people suck at knowing what their name means. They seriously do. But people of color know what their name means. The best way to do it is ask someone, what does your name mean? Why? Because it's important to them. Why? Because it's the only thing that God gives parents the ability and the freedom to choose. Everything else he decides. And even then he kind of decides that if you really wanted to go there. But our names are important to us. Those kids are precious. Spend time with teens. Why? Because they're our next leaders. I had a young man here yesterday who was doing some work for us. He was but 9 years old when I met him. And I found him next to the road smoking something with some older boys. He's now a man of God. I had the privilege of doing his wedding. I had the privilege of helping him, and he's involved in one of the Doxa churches in Pretoria. But today we are friends, even though they are 12 years apart. And he's had his first child. There's some of you sitting here who I spend time with and quality with. And when we connect again, we pick up where we left off, like riding that bicycle. They want to know that you care. Okay, so we have to be more careful. We'll talk about how to be careful and not like me. But they want to know that you care and that it means something. That you are their biggest supporter. Because that's what Graham did to me. He might be 66 and I'm 41, but to this day, once a year, he'll message me on my birthday and say, hey, it's your youth pastor. How's it going? And it just means so much to me. Love young people. Spend time with them. At this function I was at, yes, on this weekend, it was the 50th. Who do I get grouped with without trying? All the teenagers. So all the adults are sitting there, and all the teenagers are sitting around Charles. Why? Because my uncle used to do that. He used to come sit with us. He used to teach me how to play chess. He taught me how to play tennis. He taught me how to talk to women. Why? Because my dad was just too busy. He didn't have time for that, and he was trying to make money to keep us alive, and that's okay. Bless his heart. He was trying his best. But somehow, we need to start doing that and start training young people to be men and women of God. So I'm going to ask Taryn to come up. We're going to answer a few questions. We've got 10 minutes. And I'll just lose power.
I'm going to ditch my marbles.
So just shout. Just shout if you have a question. If you don't got a question, that's okay. We can break early. But if you want to ask anything, feel free. Yes, Warren.
Or whatever it may be, to be able to be free to do things like that. Because you know, being part of a church and ministry and stuff is very time demanding.
So for the guys at the back, what kind of time ratio shall we spend in relationships? As a youth pastor, so here's the deal. We all have 24 hours. When a young person tells me, I'm too busy, Charles, I can't be there on a Friday, I'm going, you're not married, you don't even have kids, you're not even earning money, you're living with mom, I'm going, sometimes you just need to suck it up. And I honestly believe that you need to decide what's important and what's not important. If relationships are so important, you have to decide that this is important. Now, that means maybe a conversation with an older leader, or that means an older leader sitting here need to have a conversation with your youth pastors and your children and say, I would like you, I want to free you up. I want to free you up 2 mornings a week. I don't even want you in the office because millennials hate it when you take the thumb and you push it down on them like this. Actually, anybody does. 2 days, I don't want you in the office. I want you in the schools and I want to see results. But I would say it would be good to, out of a 40-hour week or 48-hour week, at least half the time needs to be spent with young people, whether it's at school or after school at functions. That would be, I would think, a healthy thing for me.
Yeah, for me, just in terms of timing, a lot of the people stuff happens not when you plan it. And I think it's just making yourself available to that. You know, when a call comes or message comes through, you know, I hate myself. Then you've got to engage in that. And you can't plan for that. But you have to make it a thing, I'm going to try and do that. And then also just to be able to have a balance. Okay, we'll have a few messages backwards and forwards. Let's catch up next week. So it's just being aware that relationships are important. And it's taking little chances. It's not necessarily booking, you know, a whole 6-hour day to go and sit and say, sir, tell me about yourself. It's not even that. It's just connecting on a Sunday morning and say, hey, I see you. I'm sorry you've had a rough week. I'm praying for you. That's all. And being intentional with messaging. We've got the most beautiful thing of WhatsApp. It's fantastic. Send a message. I'm praying for you. Here we are. How's this? Doesn't need to necessarily be a whole long thing. And so I slot in a lot of my relational stuff sort of in the evening, early mornings. Not as early as we sometimes. Charlotte and I are both early risers, so we message sometimes occasionally very early. But message away. Get communicating with people, but it doesn't have to be long blocked out pieces of time. When the opportunity arises, take the moment. Take a chance. But be connecting. And be connecting with team as well as the kids and the youth that you're working with.
Does that help a little bit? Cool.
Yeah.
So there's two churches that are really doing well in this. Mams and Toti have Sweetwaters with Ryan Lopesha. He's doing really well with his youth work. And then also St. Luke's with Jordan have really started re-looking at that. And so instead of forcing it, you get the youth pastor to take a couple of guys and go and have a braai with a couple of older gentlemen and say, we're going to do this. And so you sell the vision. The vision needs to be big enough for both parties to catch it and doable. Because if you can't reach the goal, and then we create kind of godly conversations around that. The same way you can do that with ladies, just creatively. But I definitely think as a church member, lean into that. And yeah. Often you might need to lean into the youth pastor or the children's worker or and say, I'm here to assist. And that might take over and over and over until they realize that they can trust you. But I would say lean into that through the youth pastor.
Food.
Through food.
Food is the way to disciple people. Hospitality, and it doesn't mean, and I think also people sort of think, oh my gosh, I got to get wrong, I better have creme brulee and beef Wellington or some posh thing. No, anybody, you just need to say, hey, swing round, we're going to, you know, stop by the shops on the way after church, and we're going to get some rolls and you know, we make hot dogs. Great. It's not about the expense of it or the fanciness of it, it's just connecting it. So I didn't grow up in church. But I did get, I had to go to Sunday school every now and then. And one of the Sunday school moments I went to, and this is a lot of why I'm here. There was a girl that she invited some of us to her house for a braai. And we got to swim in her pool. And I will tell you now, okay, this is 32 years after the fact. Okay, now you're going to see if my age here. We had Mellow Yellow. We had Quality Street. We had Monster Munch. I remember the exact everything because someone invited me to their house and they swam with us in the pool. It wasn't rocket science, but it meant the world to me. And so get, in, you know, take people out. I've taken some young girls out. We have milkshake dates. It's 45 minutes and we have a milkshake and they tell me some stuff and they giggle and it's very sweet. But I'm still friends with them, you know, years later, and they're running stuff in their own churches, and how awesome is that? But food is the great way to start. Hospitality, just making yourself available, and it doesn't have to be fancy. Does that help?
Cool. You eat it, and I'll go there.
Have you had some challenges with parents in your houses when you started to work at something with teenagers, and then the parents come in, they want their children to focus more on sports?
So have we had challenges with the parents? Yes, and are we feeling that church is stealing their time? Because parents are happy that their children be at every sporting event and every educational event throughout the whole week, but the minute you want them in church for an hour, then it's a problem. Yes, we have. Because we have to be parents. Myself and Taryn often have to be parents to kids because parents are not parenting, which is very sad. And it's about a discussion, it's about winning over the parent. So I want to tell you, the older the person is that you employ, it often helps to talk to the parent. At 22, as much as I could be respectful and honorable to a parent, there isn't a trust factor because they just don't understand. And that's okay. And that's why we need men and women to come alongside younger youth pastors and say, I'll stand alongside this young youth pastor and I'll vouch for them. I'll go on the trip with them. I'll do this with them. I know what they're doing. And I want to say, if you're young and you're in youth ministry, you need to find some parents that are like, will die on a hill for you so that they can speak up for you. And if you're older, you have to communicate that to them. This is what we're doing. I have lots of parents who phone every week. What are you doing at youth on Friday? How are you structured? Are you teaching the Bible? Are you having too much fun? And that's okay. It's a conversation. And I often go, let's do a coffee, which then shows me that they just want to reach out. So, yes, we do. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, parents are people. They're actually just wanting relationships. If they're giving you hassles, it's because they're trying to figure out their own stuff. So take the time and have a conversation. Invest in them as well. You know, when you are discipling a youth, a teen, a kid, you're discipling their parent as well. And so don't be afraid of parents. If you come along and say, I love your child, no parent in the world is going to go, well, I'm not just that into you. You say, I love your child, I'm for your child, I want them to win, and this is why this is good. Most of them are going to say, thank you.
And choose your battles. So we went on the strip, and the parents said, I will go with, but I will drive behind the bus for 2.5 hours with my children in the car. I'm like going, do I fight this now? Would I rather try and win over this parent by saying, I honor you and I acknowledge you if you want to do it this time, but the next time let's have a discussion about your kids joining us on the bus. So choose the battles, especially with parents.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we have a number of events, and that's how we reach them. So the daddy-daughter, the child brings their dad along, and we've had many dads here that are not Christian, but they're interested in their daughter, so they'll come. So different events that we have. Then we're launching something next year. It's called a family experience, and so we're saying, come along. It's not going to be overly churchy, and I think we've got to be open to this. It's not going to be how great thou art, because The parents are going to like, what the dickens is going on here? It's a soft thing where parents get to sit alongside their children. If you want to reach parents, reach them through their parenting. They need help how to parent their children. You know, I mean, I get a lot of parents that come along there. I'm bringing my child to church because they need morals. Please, will you give them some? I'm like, yes, and I'll give them Jesus. And they're not so interested in about Jesus. And you say, oh, your child gave their life to the Lord. Hey, what? I was just wanting them to say please and thank you. But you've got to work alongside them. So create opportunities where you can do that. And the other thing is invite them for food. Get someone in the church to say, hey, that family there, they're not connected. The parents are not connected. Well, invite them around for dinner. It's a great way to get to know those parents, just socially. You don't have to have a Bible study or anything, but just socially getting and making yourself available. At some point, parents are going to want to say, hey, I need you. And transitions, what I mentioned earlier, that's a great way to get unchurched parents. When they're struggling, oh my gosh, my child's going to grade one. What do I do now? My child's going to high school. Let's get all those parents around the table. We did it recently. We got a group of parents around the table of the same grade children. Everyone's feeling the same shared experience. And at that table were people from the church and people who weren't from the church. And it was amazing. Actually, this one dad didn't even want to sit with us. And he argued with me for about 15 minutes. I said, come and have dinner. That's all you have to do. Sat down. He came to church the following Sunday. I was like, okay, great. I don't know if he's come back, but he came. He conquered the initial coming. So I think just getting people around and making opportunity for community is a huge way to start.
Cool. Well, two more questions. So I did make a statement that it takes about 18 months. So in my experience, I found that a teenager doesn't trust a person straight away. Kids are more trusting, and even parents take longer. So in the epidemic in Africa, is the average lifespan of a youth pastor is 16 months before they leave the church and move on, either because of a conflict with a senior pastor leadership, or they get paid so poorly, which is a huge issue for me, that if we want to invest in young people while we're paying them so badly, like, okay, so you have to earn that, I understand that. But the shift is so quickly like this that young people are like, he's just in and out. He's not coming back. He's not working. And that's where I push into youth leaders and pastors and go, you have to invest. If you're going to go to a school ministry, you go there and you go over the next 3 years. But they're going to check that you're not like every other guy that's come before. And I've often found that it takes about 18 months to totally win them over, where they then come to you and go, he's there. He's stuck it out. He's walked the journey with me through all the boyfriends, through all the girlfriends, through all the fights, through all this, and he's still just the same guy who loves me over and over. So that's a very broad brushstroke number, but that's what I found to happen in my experience.
It's grit. If you're going to work in ministry, you need grit. You've got to stick it out. You've got to be in for the long haul for any age. You know, the world is so, you know, this is in this day, this is in the next. It's so changing that we can really stand out and be beacons because we're consistent. We're there. They can count on us. And that's important.
So I learned this from a missionary from Zimbabwe. He said, if you want to choose a team of people, walk into a room with a tray full of eats and drinks and fall on purpose and see who helps pick up and clean up. That's your team. And I don't even want to be funny, but that is what Taryn was saying. Your team are the people who serve. A lot of people put their hand up. At the beginning of the year, I said, I want to have people who serve, and 40 people put their hands up. We had a dinner. We have a dinner once a month, so my leadership team have a dinner with me once a month, and it is required that you're at that dinner. Why? Because I need to spend time with you. Why? Because if you want to play in the team, like when we were in school and you wanted to be in this team or this team or this team, you had to be at practice. If you can't be at practice, why can you be in the team? Then you have to rock up on a day to show, and then you have to be involved with the young people. And then you can have like discussions and saying, you're not here, you are here. But a team is often looked at the heart. And so I would say, if people put their hands up, take them in, but then start spending time with them. Don't give them everything, give them small things to do, and you'll very easily see who falls away, and you very easily see who's got potential that you just need to lean into a little bit more. And so Taryn and I work with a lot of rough diamonds. Let me tell you, out of all our volunteers, we maybe got like a handful of diamonds. Everyone else is rough, but that's okay because I was rough and I probably still am rough. But it's about the heart.
And they're polishing up just great. You know, that's why I say you've got to take your volunteers on a journey. My main thing with working with kids, love Jesus. If you don't know anything else, that's fine. I'll show you. I'll help you. I'll equip you. I'll take you on this journey. And not everyone we've been able to win over, but you can walk with them. And some have, I mean, we've the friendships that we've grown. I said, we're a family. We do this together. So it's also the language and how you develop them, of saying, we're in it together. We shoulder to shoulder. And it's also journeying alongside people, you know? Not saying, okay, you do this. It's doing it together and making relationships. And so, yes, there's other stuff that you do need to do. We work through a few forms. The main thing is you need to love Jesus. Everything else I'll give you.
Does that help? We'll pray now, and then you guys can get to your next session. If you need to chat with us for a few minutes, you can. We've got 10 minutes, and we both need to get to something else.
Cool.
Do you want to pray?
Yeah, okay. Let's pray. Father God, what do you want? Okay. Father God, thank you so much that we get to be part of this work. We get to be part of making disciples, and that we get to partner with you. We get to see you, our great big God, at work in our churches. And Lord, don't ever let that get old. Let us be excited by that every single day when we walk inside and we're saying, okay, God, what are you going to show us today? Where are you going to be working today? And Lord, I pray that you would keep that excitement and energy alive in us, and that we would be hungry for that. Lord, I pray that you would make these people here hungry for disciples, that you would burn a passion in them that they just so deeply desire to make disciples. I pray that you'd give them eyes to see the people that they need to see right around them. They don't need to go far. Disciples that need discipling are right with us in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our churches. And Lord, give us the eyes to see them. And then, Lord, give us courage. Make us brave. We need you to help us. We can't do it on our own. And so, Lord, I pray that you would find us an obedient people. And I pray, Lord, that you would equip us to do this great, great task. In Jesus' name, amen.